is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Good Lord, is it really already? 3 minutes after 12 on a Thursday, you say? Well, that can mean only one thing.
Right, you know what it means, because the man with the voice just told you. It's Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. You have a question bubbling away in your brain, a mystery, a conundrum, a riddle, but you know it has a solution. It can't be sort of a rhetorical. And somebody else listening to this programme at this moment will know the answer to the question that you ask. You will ring in with the question, they will ring in with the answer. And somewhere in that process, the magic unfolds. Somewhere in that relatively simple premise, true beauty is created. If you don't believe me, stay tuned. If you do believe me, I'll just remind you that there is also a prize now available, which is the rather splendid Mystery Hour board game. I get more messages now about how much you're enjoying the board game than I have at any other point since it was released, which is incredibly gratifying. So do, and also I think it's moving into a space now where people who don't even know about the radio show are discovering the board game. And that is very, very gratifying, because it's a really, really good board game, regardless of whether you listen to the radio show or not. If you listen to the radio show, it gives you a slight advantage. It gives you an introduction to the issue. But it works perfectly well, even if you don't. Could we please have the result of the unhinged headline, James? Was it ever in any doubt? I'm a cyclist, but I can't stand them, and now I fully expect that one of these hunched morons dressed as an insect in lycra will one day kill me. That is the winner of today's Unhinged Headline Award by a country mile. And you can, of course, you can get the board game at mysteryhour.co.uk or indeed from your favourite online retailer. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is upon us, and there's a free board game to whoever submits my favourite contribution of the day. That is it. Management's decision is final. But you can find the full terms and conditions, because it's a proper grown-up competition, this is. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. So mysteryhour.co.uk to buy one, lbc.co.uk for the terms and conditions of the competition in which you can win one. Shall we crack on? I think we shall. Brian is in Loughborough. Brian, question or answer?
Afternoon, James. Love the show.
Thank
Radio
you,
for, by the people, for the people. So it's a question. Why is it that carrots take forever to cook in a tomato sauce?
What?
So if you simmer carrots in water, yeah, you know, yeah, they simmer in a reasonable amount of time, 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
If you make a tomato sauce, could be a chili or curry or whatever, you put your carrots in and they just take forever to cook.
You're supposed to sweat them.
Hey.
You're supposed to sweat your carrots and your onions, your sofrito. You sweat your hard vegetables before you put the tomato sauce in. This isn't an answer to your question. This is just cooking advice.
Oh, there we go.
Well, did you not know that?
No, I've never had any formal cooking training. I just, you know.
Well, I don't want to. Well, I only know because I've read recipe books, Brian. I'm not having a go. But goodness me, I mean, your life is about to change in an unimaginable way. When do you add the onions?
I'll put the onions in first.
So you fry the onions.
Right.
Do you?
Yes.
How long for?
Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? Getting them nice and soft without burning them.
Yeah, but, keep them on a low heat. You want to be looking at 10 minutes. You want to get them as soft as you possibly can, with the carrots in there at the same time, and some celery as well. So you sweat them all. Sweat the carrots, the celery, the onions. Chuck your garlic in a bit later in that process. But give yourself 10 minutes to sweat your carrots, mate.
And then they'll cook properly.
Then you chuck the tomatoes in. I think the Italians call it sofrito, don't they?
Bingo. Well, there we go.
You're welcome. Wow. So I don't know what the answer to your question is. Probably something to do with the boiling point of doesn't heat up tomato. I don't know. It's a good question, but I think we can all agree that you've already hit the jackpot today, Brian.
There we go. Well, I should phone up you for cooking advice more often.
Right, no, that's the extent, really. I think that's about as far as I go. But I shall give you we should try and find out the answer. What a brilliant thing that is. You're going to have. Let me know, won't you, how you get on? Because the next bolognese you cook is going to be magnificent. Gone are the days of you having crunchy carrots, polluting your bolognese,
Brian.
Seriously, it's going to change everything for you. But we will find out about why do carrots take longer to cook in tomato sauce than they do in water. I can't do everything. I'm not Delia Smith. But sweat just means you're cooking them not in anything. So think about it. If you're in the bath, well, you can actually sweat in the bath. I don't want to overcomplicate things. So you chop up your carrots, you chop up your onions, you chop up your celery. You should always have celery in your base. Lob it in a pan with a bit of oil in and keep it just on a low heat, low to medium, so that it's sweating, so that the heat is there, but it's not going to brown. And there you have it. You know what's going to happen, don't you? It's going to be a cookbook next. Hannah's in Manchester. Hannah, question or answer?
Hello, question, please.
Hello, Hannah. Carry on.
So, why is it when you go on an escalator that's not on, so you're standing onto it, and you get the sensation of being pulled, even though it's not on?
I think we've done this before. And I think the answer is that you think your brain is telling you that you're about to start moving.
Okay.
Because every single time that you have encountered that scenario before, you have started moving. Or maybe not every single time, but there is a relationship between your brain and your eyes and your body that is saying, prepare for movement. The message going from your brain, the message going from your eyes to your brain is, we're getting onto that moving staircase. Even if another part of your brain is saying, oh, look at that, it's broken, the message is still reaching your brain saying, look, we're getting onto that. Your subconscious is saying, we're getting onto that moving staircase, even as your conscious is saying, oh, what a shame it's broken. And then the brain sends the message to the rest of your body saying, brace for action, we're on the moving staircase.
Yeah, okay.
That's
it. I mean, that's great. I'm very happy with that.
I don't have any qualifications to point to or to cite, so I am going to leave it on the board for someone with at least an A level in a relevant subject to confirm, or indeed to make a mockery of me, Hannah, and reveal that I've just sold you a complete pup. But I shall get you an answer by 1 o'clock today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care. You don't want to be caramelising your onions at that point in proceedings, Gary. Honestly, I suppose you could, but it's about, he was talking about soft carrots. So you're sweating your sofrito. Mark is in Sirta in Portugal. Mark, question or answer?
James, hi. It's a question, please.
Carry on, Mark.
And just quickly, that full disclosure with Fatima Whitbread was top radio, 10 out of 10.
Thank you, Mark. Okay. She's a magnificent woman. I think there's 10 of her. I'm doing a little bit, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of involvement in her charity. And she keeps me up to date with all of her developments. And there must be 10 of her. The amount one day she's in another country meeting a minister of this or that or the other, and then she's campaigning here and campaigning there. She's a magnificent human being, Fatima Whitbread. One of my all-time favourite full disclosures. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Thank you.
That came through big time. So I've got a question about wine.
Yes.
When I used to pick grapes in France, which I used to do regularly, they always told me that white wine, you want to watch that, it winds you up. Sassonerve in French, it winds you up.
Is that a thing?
Now here I'm in Portugal, and they tell me that white wine is bad for your bone joints, your knees and your hips and your elbows.
Is that right?
So, this is what they tell me. So I'm wondering, are these rural myths, or is it possible that the chemical constituents of white wine is so different from red wine that it'd have a different effect on your body?
Well, let's begin with first principles, will we?
Go on.
Does it? Do you recognise it from your own personal experiences?
Absolutely not.
You don't at all.
No.
I do. I've never. I thought it was just me. What do the French call it?
It winds you up. Sassonerve. It winds you up.
Sassonerve.
De la A.
Yeah.
S apostrophe enerve.
Sassonerve. Oh, enerve, as in enervate. Enerve.
Exactly.
So Sassonerve? Well, I'll tell you what, mate, it enerves me like nobody's business.
I have to say, I have seen some ladies wound up on white wine.
White wine is the one that gets me, more so than almost anything else. Like just a little. Well, back in the day, it would have been Stella Artois.
Okay.
That sort of brought out my less friendly side. But white wine compared to, well, using me exclusively as a case study, I would say that it's absolutely true. But you're interested in chemical composition, not my obnoxious behaviour in public places.
Can they be that different, that they have different effects?
Well, it's just the skin, isn't it, that makes it red?
Well, it depends how they make the white wine. I mean, sometimes they press them straight away and just ferment the juice.
So the fermentation.
And sometimes they ferment the whole lot together. I don't know if that makes a difference as well.
Don't tell anyone, Mark.
Go on.
Keith's doing a wine course.
Is he?
Yeah.
I'll keep it quiet. Go on.
Keep it under your hat. He might know. Do you know this? Have you got what? How many lessons have you had so far? He's only had one lesson so far, Mark. They haven't got onto this yet. Sassy nerve. I shall find out for you. Does the white wine have a chemical composition sufficiently different from the red wine to explain the stories that Mark has heard in both France and Portugal? In France, it makes you a bit crazy, the white wine, sassy nerve. And in Portugal, they claim that it will have an effect upon your joints and what have you. I love that question. Roberto is in Bromsgrove. Roberto, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I was listening to a podcast a little while ago. It was all about why people faint.
Oh, yes.
And sort of, what's going on there and why people are more susceptible to it. And they mentioned about smelling salts.
Yes.
And how you can, create a smelling salt and that will wake somebody up.
Yes.
So what I want to know is, how do they work? What is the mechanism that, by waving this magical fluid under somebody's nose, it suddenly brings you out of being passed out and brings you back to life?
Yeah. I mean, is it not just a really, really pungent smell that just assaults your senses?
I mean, potentially, but would that then work with any really pungent smell?
Yeah.
Could you just wave,
Well, you could use ammonia. I mean, what's in smelling salts?
Well, yeah, I think it is ammonia from what I understand. But again, is it unique to ammonia, or is it?
Specifically? What's a really pungent smell? Could you use blue cheese or something like that? No, it's not quite this. Yeah. It gets up your nose in a different way. It must be something to do with the speed with which the liquid turns into gas, I reckon, Roberto, or vapour. Mm. It turns into vapour so quickly it goes up your nose like a rat up a drainpipe, perhaps.
I mean, very possibly.
It's a great question.
Is it something special in that ammonia?
It's a great question. What is it about smelling salts that makes them so good at being smelling salts?
Yeah, exactly.
This is what we want to know. Nice one. Thank you, Roberto. I grew up near Bromsgrove. Did you know that?
I did, yes. Kiddie Way, isn't
it? That's the one, yes. So you've got Chaddesley Corbett sitting just between us like a football. It's 12:16.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
Nicola Ethical. That's perfect, wasn't it? And then, of course, Rowan went on to make one of the best contributions of the day. Who's making sure that the lights are on? Shaka, in my mind, because if I had to pick a top caller from the first 2 hours of the programme today, I think I absolutely struggle to put a cigarette paper between about 10 of them. I mention that because you can, of course, use Global Player to rewind live radio or to listen later at the Global Player app. But the 2 hours on Natalie Elphick or Nicola Ethical, as I will now always think of her. Talk about irony. Very, very special radio. For politics stuff, it was among the best we've done in a long time. And you're all doing the same joke, but I like it. So we've got this from Thomas. Chaddesley Corbett, didn't he get kicked out of the Labour Party a while back? And Mark says, Chaddesley Corbett, I went to Portugal with his sister. It is one of those names. It's a little village where I went to school. It's just outside. It was in between Kidderminster and Bromsgrove, which is why I mentioned it to Roberto. But I always thought it'd be quite a good name for a detective from the sort of Agatha Christie era. Chaddesley Corbett, like Hercule Poirot, but English. It'd be Chaddesley Corbett. No? Oh, I don't know why I bother sharing this stuff with you. Jim's in Woking. Jim, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Jim.
It's about groins.
Oh, yes.
Now, don't panic. We're talking sea defence groins, not groins.
Groins with a Y.
Absolutely. How do they work? I've no idea.
Well, this is going to sound most unlikely, but I've given this quite a lot of thought.
Really?
Yes. So I spend quite a lot of time in Norfolk, and there's quite a lot of groins in Norfolk. So it must be, because I think that the basis of your question is the presumption that the tide comes in and out in a sort of vertical fashion, right?
Possibly.
No, I should explain what a groin is. Actually, you can do it. You can explain what a groin is. I've been working since 10 o'clock this morning. Go on. Tell everyone what a groin is.
Do the work. Aren't groins simply the rows of planks that run vertically down the beach?
Yes.
And they're sort of buttressed occasionally by bigger areas of planks and so on.
Yes.
You say you've given this a great deal of thought. I haven't. The question just popped into my head.
No, well, you would think that if you were trying to protect the beach from excessive erosion, then you'd build a big wall across the bottom of the beach where the sea comes in to stop all the sand being washed back out again. But, of course, all the water would be washed out as well. But longshore drift would see it going horizontally on the beach. So you stop epic amounts of sand being moved horizontally along the beach by using groins, but which is why you'll only really find them, I think, on beaches that are pleasure beaches, beaches where you're going to have summer frolics and sandcastles and the like. And the groin ensures a much more even distribution of sand than you would otherwise have, Jim.
Very good.
I think I've done it, Jim.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Our qualifications, staring at beaches and thinking, why is that there? And what can it do when it's underwater? So you go to Holcombe, where is it? Is it Wells? Certainly Cromer. You think, what's it? So what it's doing is keeping the sand in. So I bet it's linked to pleasure beaches, and it is tackling longshore drift.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm taking it.
Beaches more.
I'm taking the round of applause for that. There'll be a steward's inquiry, but I don't care. I'll have spent it by then. Thank you, Jim. Oh, how's in Brighton? Whoa, Professor Hal in the house.
Hello, James.
Where have you been? You think I do this for my own amusement?
It's been 6 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, are you all right?
I'm fine. I'm gainfully employed at a university in the southeast teaching analytical chemistry.
Fantastic.
So it's a close-run thing, but I'm back in the game.
Oh, mate, I'm so happy. You should have let me know, though.
I wanted to be sure it was in the bag before I made an announcement. Okay. I've rung in a couple of times, but here we are.
Yeah, I heard you on another show, actually, not long
really?
Ago. Really? Yeah. A couple of months ago.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's fine. Question or answer?
I was delighted to hear about the escalator one, because we have had this before, and I was very happy to make an answer to it.
Excellent.
And you hit the nail on the head, and actually almost hit it without missing it entirely on this occasion, because it is to do with the expectation. It was all to do with it's Pavlov's dogs again. That we go through this process, we touch an escalator and it takes our arm away. So the next time we do it and it's not moving, we think it ought to be moving. And it was a Russian psychologist called Pavlov who did some rather unhealthy experiments with dogs.
Ivan Pavlov.
Ivan, yeah, exactly.
Ask me how I know that.
How do you know that, James?
It was in a crossword 2 days ago in the New York Times. I knew the Pavlov bit, but I got the Ivan bit by getting all the down clues that were next to them. But it sticks in your mind. It sticks in your mind, Hal.
No, it does. He rather unkindly made holes in dogs' stomachs, and he would ring a bell and then feed them, and so the gastric juices would dribble out, which is how he measured that they were ready to eat.
Oh, God.
And at some point, he failed to feed them, having rung the bell, but they still salivated and the liquor came out of the stomach. Yeah. Ghastly, ghastly.
It is a ghastly experiment.
It's things like if you've changed your car and you reach for the gear stick on your old car, or when you're a passenger and someone's braking late, you start braking for them in sympathy.
Yeah.
In victims of violent abuse, they have an exaggerated startle reflex. And when you're driving overseas, momentarily driving on the wrong side of the road because you've kind of forgotten you need to be driving on the right side of the road. You're conditioned to do these things.
Is there a word for it? Like, you know, a kind of pithy phrase for it?
Yes, operants conditioning.
Operands?
Operants, with a T on the end.
Operant. Conditioning.
Associate one thing with another thing, even if the second thing doesn't happen, you still do the first thing.
Oh, love it. Jack's been in touch. He says, there goes my question. I was going to ask what had happened to Professor Hal. Qualifications?
Hitherto, I was Professor of Public Understanding at the University of Brighton, and now I'm lecturing something else.
That's fantastic. Let's give him a round of applause. Great to hear from you, mate. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Cheers, bye-bye. Man. 12:25 is the time. Andrea is in Huntley. Andrea, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I live in the middle of nowhere, along a farm track, no other gardens nearby. Mm. And I've lived here 7 years.
Yes.
And I have a tulip.
A tulip.
That has come up in the middle of my grass.
Gosh.
Now, I understand that birds transfer seeds and stuff like that, but I had understood that tulips come from bulbs. Now, I was talking to your producer.
Yeah.
And she said, well, yes, okay, tulips can originally come from seeds, which would then grow the bulb. And I get that. But
you. Hang on. Yeah. I just want to establish which producer this was who was coming over all, or coming over all Alan Titchmarsh. Was it you? Seriously? Okay. Hmm. Pinch of salt. Pinch of salt time, Andrea, I think, if I may. Carry on.
Yeah, I just don't know how it got there. And if it does originally come from a seed, how... I mean, I've lived here over 6 years and I've never had a tulip there before.
I think they can come from seeds, is the short answer.
Right, okay. So how long will it
be a bird, won't it, that has eaten a seed? How long is the... What was the other bit of the question?
Well, I just wondered if it then developed into a bulb before it then grew into the flower and how long that would take.
Hmm. But that I don't know. What did the producer say?
She didn't know, which is why it's a mystery.
Well, she said that out loud. Okay, you're on. So, presuming it's a seed that has spawned the tulip... What happened?
Yeah.
What happened after the seed arrived? Did it become a bulb? Does it become a flower and then die back into a bulb? I mean, there's so much going on here.
That's exactly it. And I've just got this random bright red tulip in the middle of my lawn.
How delightful. Could it be an admirer?
Well, I hope so.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? It'd be quite a lovely thing to do, wouldn't it?
I'm mowing round it.
You would, wouldn't you? You would. When I got... One of the great regrets of my life, Andrea, is that I was a punishment towards the end of my time at school. A punishment. I had to surrender a whole weekend. I won't tell you what the transgression was because I might fall in your estimation. But I had to plant banks and banks of daffodils in my housemaster's garden. And I arranged them into a very rude message.
Quite right.
And I wasn't there to see the benefits of it. I sent a picture, but you couldn't really make it out, to be honest. But I'd like to think if I'd still been there, I'd have gone out at night and pruned the daffodils just to make sure that the words in the flowers were easy to see. But your tulip is a different proposition all entirely. I shall find out for you what happened. What is life cycle of a tulip? Thank you. Could have been a squirrel. No, of course, it wasn't necessarily a bird. There is always that possibility. To bear in mind, 28 after 12. Pete's on the Isle of Man. Pete, question or answer? Pete.
Oh, James, what? Sorry. Something happened to my phone. Are you all right?
I'm great, yeah. It was you I was right about. What happened?
I think because I had my headphones in before when I took them off, it kept trying to reconnect to them.
Yeah, so I get that a lot. I get that a lot. Question or answer, Pete?
It is a question, James.
Go on.
So, James, I don't know whether you'll have watched it. I don't want to mean to insult you. I don't know whether you'll be too old to remember The Fun House.
With Pat Sharp?
Yeah, with Pat Sharp.
And the twins?
Yeah.
All right, come here a minute. Come here a minute, mate. All right? Yeah. Come here a minute, you little whippersnapper. Yeah. Not only do I remember Fun House, but I was hanging out at a showbiz soiree with Pat Sharp a matter of mere weeks ago.
Well, you may well be able to answer this question.
Highly unlikely. It was, since you asked, it was Chris Moyles' 50th birthday party, because that's the kind of glamorous life that I lead.
Yeah, I can't imagine this question will have come up during your time at Chris Moyles' 50th
birthday. No, but Pat might be listening. You never know your luck. Go on.
Exactly. Right, so I used to absolutely love that show. I used to watch it as a kid. I'd always sit and watch it with my mum.
It was a great show.
And if you'll remember, but in case anybody else doesn't remember, there were two teams, two groups of kids, a red team and a blue team.
Yes.
They did a load of tasks, and then the winning team got to go in the fun house at the end, which was essentially the greatest soft play any child has ever seen.
Yes.
It looked magical, right? And the winning team went in there to do the main challenge. I remember when I was a kid, I used to get upset, and I'd say to my mum, oh, the losing team have come all that way, they don't even get in to go to the fun house. Now, my mum used to say, it's all right, I know the producer. They just let the losing team on to have a play once the cameras are gone.
That's nice.
Now, I'm almost certain my mum was just being kind to us. I don't remember her having any producer friends. But I think the only way I can actually find this out is through somebody that was either on the show or that produced the show.
This has been preying on your mind for some time, Pete.
It has, yeah.
So did the losers on Pat Sharp's Funhouse get to have a go on the Funhouse?
Yeah.
When the cameras were off, as a sort of consolation prize?
Yeah, yeah.
We've had some questions over the years on Mystery Hour, Pete. But I can confidently say that we have not had this one before.
It's not in the board game, I've checked.
No, you're telling me it's not in the board game. I mean, it might be in the booster pack that I think we're getting out later this year. All right, you're on.
Fabulous. I mean, a Pat Sharp rings off, it really would be a winner.
Let's not get carried away. We might get a twin. Let's not get carried away here, Pete. But he is, I can tell you, if you're interested, he's a really, really nice man. A really nice man.
Yeah.
He really is. You're on. All right. So did the losers on Funhouse get to have a go on the Funhouse? Because Pete's mum said, and she didn't know a producer at all, did she? I don't think. But you never know. Stranger things have happened. 12:31 is the time. Amelia Cox, how's your headlines?
Mystery. Shopify Point of Sale is retail made right, so you can give in-store customers what they really want.
Like click and collect?
Yep.
Can I display in-store stock online?
Definitely.
From every location?
From 1,000 locations.
Email capture? Easy returns?
Of course.
Can it make me right all the time?
No. Shopify Point of Sale. Retail made right. Visit shopify.co.uk/in-store to learn more.
Play Set for Life and you could. £10,000 every month for 30 years. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
With James O'Brien, this is LBC.
It's 12:35, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We want to know why carrots take longer to cook in tomato sauce than they do in water. But don't worry, I told Brian all about sweating. Escalator has been done by Hal. Is there a chemical difference between white wine and red wine of sufficient significance that it would explain why in France people believe that white wine makes you a little bit punchy? And in Portugal, it is believed that white wine has a deleterious effect upon your joints, for example, in a way that red wine doesn't. I mean your knee joints and your ankle joints, not your enjoyment of other substances. How do smelling salts work and why? I thought I'd done the groins, but I suspect there's a steward's inquiry on the horizon. There's a single tulip growing in Andrea's lawn, and we want to know what happened because we thought they came from bulbs. But apparently they come from seeds. So at what point does the bulb... Just give me a tulip masterclass, all right? And then on Pat Sharp's Funhouse, did the losing team get to have a go on the Funhouse? Because that's what Pete's mum told him back in the day after claiming that she had a particular beeline to one of the producers. What a lovely, sensitive young lad Pete sounds like, eh? Be sitting there watching a nice television entertainment... I'm feeling sorry for the people that lost and thinking, oh, I hope they get a... And does his mum sound lovely as well? There's a lovely little vignette there of a beautiful domestic moment on the Isle of Man in the 1980s where little Pete said to his mum, oh, mum, do you think the team that lost get to go on the Funhouse? And Pete's mum thought, do you know what? This is a cruel, cruel world. And life, as the great Thomas Hobbes famously observed, she thought to herself, life is nasty, brutish and short. And Pete will learn these lessons. But I don't want him to learn them yet, she said to herself on the Isle of Man in the 1980s. So she turned to little Pete and she said, oh, don't worry, little Pete. I know the producer of the Funhouse, Pat Sharp's Funhouse. And they let the losing team have a go on the Funhouse after all the cameras have been turned off. And that consoled little Pete until the cruel, cruel world came calling. And that youthful idyll was polluted by the knowledge that adults can sometimes, with the best of intentions, mislead little children, and that they will sometimes tell us and indeed each other what we want to hear rather than the truth. And ever since that moment, little Pete has been, well, first of all, he's now Big Pete, but ever since that moment, little Pete and then later Big Pete have been wondering whether it was actually true. And today, he may find out. He may find out. I hope he does. Andy's in Tunbridge. Andy, question or answer?
Hello, James. Answer and slight correction okay. to your...
Groins. Yeah, so go on.
You're mostly right. The thing that is I would correct is it's not necessarily about pleasure beaches. It's also okay. where we have coastal defences and the material needs to be kept in place in order to protect the toe of those defences. So longshore drift you mentioned, and you're quite right to bring that up. Think of a visualised longshore drift as like the teeth of a saw.
Yeah.
Where you've got if the coastline generally have a prevailing wind direction, which is usually oblique to the coast.
Yeah.
So material will be pushed up the beach on those waves as yes. a consequence of that prevailing wind. And then when the water then recedes back into the water, the material then gets dragged down vertically. So you yes. end up with the material being pushed along in this kind of zigzag pattern. So what we have groins in place for is to protect the loss of that material.
Yes.
So essentially, what you'll see is, if you look at groins, you'll end up with a pile up of material on one side and then a much lower on the other side. What it allows us to then do is to regather that material and recycle it back to the beach. So we tend to have projects in, you know, I'm an environment yes. agency. We have projects all year round, particularly after the wind storms, where we recycle that material and we start bringing it back into the.
So it has an environmental benefit as well as a pleasure beach benefit.
Yeah, it's a coastal defence purpose.
But this is a mere embellishment of my answer, Andy. It's not a correction, is it?
It is, yeah. It's just a bit more detail about how the process works and the reason why.
And I like it, and you'll get a round of applause. But it is interesting that I work that out simply by looking at beaches and thinking.
Yeah.
Just thinking, well, what else could it be? They must be trying to keep it there for a reason. And if I'd thought about it for a bit longer, if I'd been to more beaches, I probably would have realised, well, it's not just for sandcastles. It's also got a more profound purpose as well. And there it is. You've described it to us. Qualifications, I know you've alluded to it, but you know how this works.
Environment Agency, various qualifications in sort of earth sciences.
History Hour stalwart. Now that Professor Howe's back in the game, you're going to have to look to your guns, Andy. Round of applause, please. Greg's in Clapham. Greg, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Cool. So all around town, there's these little shops where you can get your shoes fixed and your cobblers, and they seem to all do engraving and key cutting.
Yeah.
I get the relationship there, but I want to know what common thread of skill training is marrying those three things up, and seldom anything more than those.
Well, it'd be the machine, wouldn't it? The same machine.
Possibly, but engraving is very precise.
Yeah.
Hammering a shoe is not.
Well, you say that. Have you ever tried it? Why don't you fix your own shoes then, clever clogs? Clever clogs, do you get it? Clever clogs.
Yeah,
sorry.
Very nice.
I think it's a lot harder than you think.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Oh, you mean, I thought you were talking, so you're not talking about engraving and key repair. You're talking about the engraving and key repair alongside the cobbling.
Yeah, it's always those three.
Well, oddly enough, I had James Timpson on the Full Disclosure podcast last month. I could have asked him that. He's a lovely bloke. Do you want to know something interesting, Greg?
Go for it.
It's not very interesting. Where do you think the busiest Timpson's kiosk in the country is?
It's going to be near a big London station.
Listen to you with your southern ways. It's outside Sainsbury's in Kidderminster.
No way.
Yeah, straight up. It's either the busiest kiosk or actually the most profitable Timpson's outlet in the whole country. I can't remember which. This is director's cut stuff, this. We didn't even do this on the podcast. This came up afterwards. So it's a world exclusive. Could you sound a bit more excited?
Well, but you weren't very certain about the fact.
One of those facts is true. And they are perhaps not equally exciting, but they're both world exclusives.
Right.
So I think the answer is actually just it happened by, you know, they got the machine and I don't think you use the same machine for the shoes and the other stuff, but it just made sense commercially and then it caught on. But obviously you're not going to accept that. So I will leave it. I will leave it on the board. why do cobblers always double up as key cutters and engravers?
Perfect.
Thank you. No, thank you. Cheers, Greg. 12:43 is the time. We need some answers. Come on, come on. Answers, answers, answers. Tom's in Cincinnati, Ohio. Tom, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Why do towels in hotel rooms work so much better than the towels that I have at home at drying me?
Superb question. What a superb question. Are they always white? No.
In my experience, yeah, hotel towels tend to be white. Okay. The towels at home are not white.
I'm assembling an answer in my mind as we speak. Maybe they cook them, wash them on a much higher temperature or a much lower temperature than we normally do.
But why would that make them... How would that affect their ability to dry you? Why is it so universally...
Fluffiness.
They
wash them with nothing else.
Fluffiness.
Have you ever put a tennis ball in your tumble dryer with your towel?
My wife insists on using 3 of these tennis ball conditioner things instead of drying sheets. I have no idea what that does.
Tennis balls fluff up your towels. I think the answer might have something to do with the fact that they wash all the towels with nothing else. But I'm not going to get a round of applause for this. Frankly, I'll probably get taken off air. It's such a poor quality answer to your question. So why?
I think the clue was the fact that you said "I think."
Yeah, that's always a bad start. I'm going to put it. I wish you'd gone a bit earlier, actually, because I want to have a. I really would like to know that. As Ryrie's been in touch, to say now that's a proper mystery hour question. I think you're absolutely right, but it's probably tumble dry, and we probably don't tumble dry our towels normally. We hang them up to dry. So if you tumble dry your towels, you probably would have hotel quality toweling. But I shall see. Someone will know. 0345 6060 973. Could we have some answers, please, to the variety of questions that remain unresolved? The time now is 12:45.
London, boost your spring clean with Samsung's AI-powered appliances. Our most powerful cordless vacuum, Bespoke Jet AI, makes cleaning a breeze on any surface. And wash laundry effectively at cooler temperatures with our Eco Bubble technology, giving you more time this Thursday to enjoy the spring sunshine. Give your spring a boost with up to £350 cashback and a 5-year warranty. Samsung, do less, live more. Participating retailers 18 plus only. Offer ends 18th of June. Claim from Samsung between 30 to 90 days of purchase. Redeem warranty within 90 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Has the penny dropped yet? Well, the pennies are dropping at Aldi. In-store now this week's Super 6 from as little as 29p. British chestnut mushrooms and little gem lettuces just 59p. Extra fine beans and oranges just 79p. Piccolato tomatoes only 1.19. And chilies just 29p. Cha-ching! So chop chop, get down to Aldi.
Mystery. London. Boost your spring clean with Samsung's AI-powered appliances. Our most powerful cordless vacuum, Bespoke Jet AI, makes cleaning a breeze on any surface. And wash laundry effectively at cooler temperatures with our Eco Bubble technology, giving you more time this Thursday to enjoy the spring sunshine. Give your spring a boost with up to £350 cashback and a 5-year warranty. Samsung. Do less. Live more. Participating retailers 18 plus only. Offer ends 18th of June. Claim from Samsung between 30 to 90 days of purchase. Redeem warranty within 90 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Disney Plus, what's your emergency?
911, that's my emergency. When can I expect new episodes?
The new season of 911, the hit US drama, is now streaming on Disney Plus.
It's back!
That's right, but warning, new episodes come with a risk of scorching hot drama, floods of tears, and more heart-racing moments with Angela Bassett.
Oh, I can't wait. But now that's sorted, can you track down who stole my wheelie bin?
No, we can't help you with that.
The new season of 911, now streaming exclusively on Disney Plus from $4.99 a month. 18 plus subscription required. T's and C's apply.
On LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. Carrots, wine. No, we kind of did the carrots, but didn't do the carrots properly. Wine, smelling salts, the tulip, funhouse, cobblers, and towels. Steve's in Southampton. Steve, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's the, although sweating works, it's the acidic content of.
Are you in the bath? Are you in the bath?
No.
I thought just heard some splashing in the background.
No, well. I was in the kitchen, and I left the kitchen, so perhaps that's why.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, go on. Yes, carrots in tomato sauce.
It's the acidic content in the whatever you're cooking it in, which is why you can boil carrots in water and milk and butter, for example, and they'll soften. But you could boil carrots for 6 hours in tomato, and it's not going to. Although milk and butter is slightly acidic, it's closer to neutral that whatever the component or compound in the carrot is, it won't soften.
Well, I never... So, well, ever. I mean, well, it will soften eventually, but it will just take a very, very long time.
I don't know. The chefs I've worked with in the past have said, it could be 6 hours and the carrots are not going to soften.
So flipping it. So Brian in Loughborough has been has been eating really crunchy carrots in every sauce he's ever cooked for the best part of his life.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And now, thanks to me mostly, but subsequently also you a little bit, he will be able to enjoy a decent... it's sofrito, isn't it? Sofrito.
I guess so. But yeah, it's as I say, the lactic acid in milk is very minimal, so you can...
Very mild, so it won't have an impact upon the carrot cooking process. Qualifications, Steve?
I've just been in and around kitchens professionally for like 25 years.
That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Steve.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well done, mate. John's in North Kensington. John, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
First time caller, a little bit nervous, strangely. But anyway.
Whereabouts in North Kensington are you?
I'm actually in Surrey, but I live in Ladbroke Grove.
Okay, I used to live there. You could have been more specific, but then again, it might have lost the room. So crack on.
Oxford Gardens. Anyway.
Okay, lovely. Yes.
So the difference between white wines and red wines is about 3,000 compounds in each. They're pretty similar. The difference is mainly that red wines are fermented on skins, whereas white wines are taken off skin straight away. And the skins will give you anthocyanins, which is the pigment, and tannins, which is the bitterness that you get from it.
Mm.
So the only reason I can see that people would complain about white wine is that they generally have a higher SO2 level, sulfur dioxide, than red wines.
So worse hangovers then?
Worse hangovers and any other sort of medical things that you want to blame on white wine as opposed to red.
Would be down to the sulfur dioxide.
It's a lower pH as well, which makes the sulfur quite sort of abundant.
What was the phrase? Did you remember? Sassenerve. Have you heard that phrase before?
Sassenerve, no.
Sassenerve.
No, you know, I don't speak
it means
that
the white wine. I don't either, mate. You could probably tell. The idea that the white wine makes people a little bit tasty, John, a little bit a little bit I, you know.
Well, not really. The white wine's generally got a lower alcohol content than red wine, especially these days.
Yeah, but you drink it quicker. 14%.
Yeah, you do because it's cold and it's refreshing.
So that it might just be that, mightn't it? It might just be that if someone did some research, per glass intake's probably higher per hour than it is with red wine, with a white wine, especially on a hot day.
There's also the histamine question. Red wine's got more histamines, which are meant to be good for you. So,
qualifications?
If you're not allergic to them.
Qualifications?
I'm a winemaker. I'm an international wine consultant and a chief winemaker at Denby's.
Where's your vineyard?
In Surrey, Denby's Wine Estate. It's quite big. It's about 100 acres of vineyard.
How exciting. How's business?
Very good.
English wine is
booming.
It really is booming, and rightly so. It's lost its novelty. Well, it lost its novelty value some time ago. I mean, it's punching with the big boys now, isn't it?
It is. Sadly, it's difficult to keep the prices as low as the multiples want them. But
Do you do a fizzy wine by any chance?
We do.
Well, what are you complaining about? You'll be able to sell it in pint bottles soon, John, and your world will be transformed.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah, I mean, it's just one of the so many benefits of breakfast.
We can have pint bottles. No one's ever expressed any particular desire to either manufacture or buy them, but hey, Brexit!
Yeah, that's great.
Round of applause for John. Good work, mate. I shall find one of your bottles and drink it this very weekend. That's research. I always like to do a lot of research on the programme. Lovely answer from John. 12:53 is the time. Sam's in Amersham. Sam, question or answer?
Hi, James. An answer for you on the tulip question.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So I didn't hear the question. I only heard your summary, but I gather that a tulip has bloomed in a lawn for the first time after 6 years.
It's the only flower ever to appear in that lawn. It's the only tulip for 400 miles, a 400-mile radius. It's the only tulip. I made up the last bit.
I don't know about the 400-mile radius, but... Tulips can be grown from seed. They rarely are because they take such a long time to come to the point where we know them as a big, full, flat bloom. But if you left a tulip bulb to be pollinated, pollinator comes along, and just behind the flower, that little case, that seed case, would then start to grow and fatten. And when the seed is ripe, it can be blown away or picked up by a bird and nestled in a lawn. it would take many years for it to come to flower. The bulbs that we buy from typically Dutch growers have been grown in a field for many years.
So the seed grows into a bulb point. And then the bulb produces a flower?
Effectively, effectively it will pattern into a bulb.
So has been nestling in Andrea's lawn for years?
Effectively, yes.
Wow. I had no idea. Qualifications?
So I'm a garden designer and I'm also a debut show garden designer at Chelsea Flower Show this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Are you coming along?
Are you asking?
It would be lovely to see you there.
I've never been to the Chelsea Flower Show. I keep meaning to, but that's so exciting for you.
It's incredibly exciting. We start
nervous?
To build tomorrow.
Well, you'll be fine, I can tell. If you get into any bother, just give them a lecture on tulips. You'll be laughing.
Unfortunately, we haven't got any tulips on the garden, but we do have other bulbs.
How exciting. Well, congratulations and good luck. But regardless of what happens at Chelsea, Sam, you've got a mystery round of applause.
Thank you very much.
So you're already a winner. 12:55 is the time. Maria is in Barnet. Maria, question or answer?
I think it's an answer, I hope.
Carry
somebody.
On.
So the guy that rang earlier about the towels,
yes.
About them drying and how long it takes, you know, there's difference in towels that you get at hotels and at home. The reason I know a little bit about it is because a while back we bought some towels for home and they weren't the same. They weren't drying the same as the towels we had previously. And it got me quite interested into why they're different towels.
Yes.
Yeah. So I looked into it and I discovered something called a GSM, which stands for grams per square meter, I believe.
Yes.
So that's why some towels actually will be heavier than other towels. So the lighter the towel, they say that the quicker it takes to dry.
But how does that play into the hotel versus home?
So the hotel towels, they all tend to be, from what I remember reading into it, they were like about 400 GSM, which are quite heavy, a lot heavier than the ones we have at home.
Ah.
So they're thicker. They're a lot thicker. So
they go in industrial drying machines. And if you haven't got an industrial dry machine, you can't really be messing around with a 400 GSM towel.
No, that's right. And adding air, obviously tumble drying them and adding the air to them makes them more fluffy naturally.
But the higher the GSM, the better the absorbency.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I think you've only gone and done it, Maria.
Oh, I don't know. Well, it's so boring, isn't it, knowing about towels?
It's not remotely boring.
If you go to the supermarket now and look at labels on towels...
Hang on, I didn't mean to encourage you to go further. No.
I hope that's answered the question anyway.
Let's find out. Yes, it has. Look at that. A round of applause. Thank you, Maria. I love that. I shall now look out for GSMs on the towels. In fact, I may raise the issue with Mrs. O'Brien when I get home. Oh, no. Not a steward's inquiry, Rosa in Edgware, surely.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. Now, what the previous lady was saying is all true, but really, the reason, particularly the dry bed, is because like every other item made for commercial use, they are better quality. Have you ever heard those commercials? Oh, buy this towel, they are hotel quality towel. Any item they get used a commercial way, like in a kitchen, if you buy an oven, they use for a kitchen, it's going to cost four times more than a normal oven. Why? Because it gets used so much
It's never off. I looked at ovens recently that were of catering quality. I didn't understand what it meant, except that they were three times more expensive than all the other ovens, but that's why.
Because the quality...
So the towels are going to be... You're adding a new dimension to the answer that we got rather than challenging qualifications.
I've been in the industry, commercial industry, for a while. So if I could just add, if I could just add one last thing
of
about
course.
The towel,
yes,
they get washed so much more than normal towels, so they must be made of a better quality.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you, Rose? I don't want to be using someone else's manky old towels.
Exactly.
Environment or no environment. Well, round of applause for Rosa. We didn't get a Pat Sharp answer. I'm going to give Pete the board game then, aren't I? Little Pete. Little Pete gets the board game. Big Pete gets it, but it's really a present for Little Pete. And that question, I will get an answer to that question one day. I need to offer an apology. Apparently, I'm told by many people who enjoy the Breakfast Show on Radio X, it wasn't Chris Moyles' 50th birthday that I attended. It was actually his 30th. And that is my mistake, and I apologise for it wholeheartedly. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, the official LBC app, where you can also pause and rewind live radio. Download it now for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Disney Plus, what's your emergency?
911, that's my emergency. When can I expect new episodes?
The new season of 911, the hit US drama, is now streaming on Disney Plus.
It's back!
That's right, but warning, new episodes come with a risk of scorching hot drama, floods of tears, and more heart-racing moments with Angela Bassett.
Oh, I can't wait. But now that's sorted, can you track down who stole my wheelie bin?
No, we can't help you with that.
The new season of 911, now streaming exclusively on Disney Plus from $4.99 a month. 18 plus subscription required. T's and C's apply.